Will has been left changed by his experience being assaulted by the shadow monster last episode. His body temperature is dropping, and he's experiencing a psychic connection to the monster, which is compelling him to speak and behave strangely.
Will eventually makes a series of hundreds of crayon drawings that Hopper and Joyce manage to connect into a larger collage that seems to display a sequence of vines, which Will explains bring death. Armed with this new information, Hopper starts digging up the blighted pumpkin patches, where he discovers a network of tunnels underground that are riddled with upside-down corruption.
Nancy and Jonathan are detained by the Hawkins lab before they can meet with Barb's mother. The almost certainly evil Dr. Paul Reiser explains that he must contain the truth just as he contains the portal growth, giving them a demonstration of their flamethrower maintenance technique. Nancy gets the entire exchange on tape, and after leaving says she wants to burn the lab down.
Eleven is stuck cleaning the cabin after her and Hopper have a knockdown, drag-out fight over her escape last episode, where she discovers a box of Hopper's Hawkins lab research under the floorboards. Her snooping leads her to make brief contact with her mother, Terry Ives, via the astral plane, before her mom dissolves into smoke, which shatters Eleven.
Max decides that she's had enough of the boys freezing her out and makes a dramatic exit from the group. The boys struggle throughout the episode to find Dart, while Dustin conceals the fact that he is sheltering the upside-down creature in his turtle tank. Dustin makes a grisly discovery when he arrives back home. Dart has transformed into a baby Demogorgon and is feasting on the family cat.
Welcome to Dungeons and Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched Season 2, Episode 4, titled Chapter 4, Will the Wise. What'd you think of this episode?
Another winner, man.
Yeah.
I was totally off on what was going to happen to Will.
No, he is not normal.
No. He's not even normal body temperature.
Nope.
And I like the development they're giving with L. I really liked what they did with Max here, because like at the beginning of this episode, after the third time, like the billionth time they've locked her out of an AV meeting, I'm like, Jesus Christ, why don't you just say this is bullshit? And
right.
Then like next scene, she's like, this is bullshit. And it's so, what I think is brilliant about this is like how they take common like parent and child fears and they put this science fiction bent, or even common family dynamics. And mm-hmm. like the first season is, what if your child's kidnapped?
Mm-hmm.
Only like the worst version of that is he's literally being tortured in this other dimensional thing that you can't understand and can't reach. And like it's that. And like I think
yeah.
there's a little bit of, you know, like with Hopper and Eleven, they're having like your average father-daughter teenage strife conflict, but it's like the highest stakes possible. It's not that she's going to make time with that no good ne'er-do-well Mike. It's that she's going to get picked up and destroyed by the federal government or put back into a lab. So,
mm-hmm.
like, they keep ramping. I even think there's a little bit of like continue to be child abduction or abuse here going on with Will, because, you know, Joyce desperately wants to keep her son safe, but she's like what if your son was abducted or abused and you can't stop the abuser from coming in and doing more harm whenever they want? Like it's the
yeah.
most horrifying version of all this, and which is why it works so well and is so compelling.
Yeah, and I think you know, in as much as Hopper identified with Joyce last season over Will's being missing,
yeah,
I think he's going to identify more with her this season over her inability to stop what's happening to Will, you know?
Yeah.
We saw a lot of flashbacks last season with Hopper being powerless when his daughter was essentially dying of fever, I think
yeah.
is what it was.
Yeah.
This season, the same is happening to Will, except it's the opposite. He's getting colder and colder, you know?
Yeah. I felt like we're getting frustrated with the dynamic between Elle and Hopper. Do you want to talk about that? Because I want to see...
Yeah. Frustrated with the dynamic. I don't know. I mean, I think Elle herself is getting frustrated because it's very much Hopper is putting her in a similar situation to the lab. You
yeah.
know, she is confined in this place. It might be for her own good. It might be for her protection, but she's
right.
still confined.
Yeah, yeah.
She's still going to feel the same way she felt before. It's just now she doesn't have to kill cats.
Yeah, which is an upgrade, and she can watch television.
It is, but is it a satisfying upgrade? You know, it's satisfying for the first 300-plus days, but now we're talking about a year in, and yeah. she is getting antsy, and totally understandable.
No, it's totally understandable. That's why I said like it works so good, because it's like the stakes couldn't be higher. Because I was thinking, like, you know, like if you have your kid and like it's a Diary of Anne Frank situation where you're hiding from the Nazis, or you're hiding from a thing that, like, if it got out that you were in the place that you're at, like, your life would literally be over.
Yeah.
How long do you stay in the attic?
Uh-huh.
You know, like, how long do you, is like 5 years or a year, 5 years, 10 years? When do you're like, you know what, fuck it, I'm going to roll my dice and take the chances with the Nazi. And with this, you know, Levin being a little girl with very little context, like, she's not had a normal life. She's been in one type of confinement to the other. But then you can also see Hopper's frustration and rage, because he knows, like, look, I get it. This is like a lot of your life, and it's a bullshit situation. But also, I need to keep you safe. Yeah. I just think it's compelling as hell.
It is, yeah. That's why I'm not sure I'm getting frustrated with the dynamic. I think it's just a frustrating situation for everyone,
right?
You know,
right.
The dynamic is still interesting, too.
And that's the thing, like, in a normal father-daughter type of relationship, you can, for better or worse, effectively confine your child.
Sure.
You know, they have to get much older before they can, like, you know, fully, you know, just, like, start breaking down doors and breaking out windows. But, like, 11 is literally the super child.
Uh-huh.
You know, how does Mom, Pa, Kent discipline Superman?
Right.
Exactly. They never deal with that in the comics. He's just like the perfect child.
Of course he is, yeah. Here, there's some angst.
I'm sure someone will send me an email. Actually, in Action Comics number 473, he tags...
Clark uses his laser vision
He tags the water tower with graffiti.
Right. Ooh, so bad.
And Pa Kent has to get a Kryptonian paddle.
Was Superman at the party at Tina's house? Is that what you're hypothesizing?
No.
With the tagging?
No. Okay. That was back in his youth. He doesn't do that anymore. But yeah, no, it's amazing.
It's cool, too, because they're, in some ways, they're keeping it very grounded and small. You know, even though it's this big deal, it's this epic scope of, like, the FBI and this manhunt and all that kind of stuff. But you still, like... When Elle comes home and she sees Hopper on the porch waiting for her, I think every kid knows that feeling of sneaking out and coming home and know you got to pay the piper, right?
Like, shit, I wish that I could do this thing and not pay a cost. And yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's explaining to her. He's like, okay, well, you know, if you don't want to take my advice, then there's no more TV, no more Egos and all that. And
I guess the thing that surprised me is how much Hopper loses his shit here. And how much he's not able to, you know, apologize for it later on.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't, like, if I was in an Anne Frank situation with my son, mm-hmm. and I turned my back for 1 second and he sneaks out after a year and gets spotted by the fucking goose-stepping dipshit brigade,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I would be furious. I'd be beside myself. And like,
yeah, but I don't know that screaming at her... is going to help the situation.
I get it, but I'm saying, like, when you're in a situation where you're that scared and angry,
yeah,
like,
you don't
get that. And I think they both went there. And it's scary because, like, you know, Elk fucking tear him in half.
That's the thing I kept worrying about is Hopper's safety.
Because, that's the thing you always got to keep in mind when you're, like, when you get angry at your children is, like, you are a monster compared to them. Like, you could just destroy them physically if you wanted to. It's a scary situation. It's like... You know, if a fucking 800-pound gorilla was screaming in your face, where that same dynamic, because Hopper's huge and he's just mm-hmm. physically tough and Elle's this little girl, but again, the science fiction concept allows him to flip that in hand where he's like genuinely scared at one point when she throws the book at him and starts throwing furniture at him. Like,
yeah,
he goes from anger, he's actually scared in that scene.
Yeah, and I was not... super worried until she called him Papa, because I had made that connection, but the moment she makes that connection, she's called Papa a bad man.
Yeah.
She called Dr. Brenner a bad man, and I was really worried for Hopper at that point. Like, is Hopper going to die in this scene or get very badly injured?
Depends on how dark they want to get in the show, which that's a question I have for a lot of this stuff, because...
I don't think they're afraid to go there sometimes.
I don't think they are either. But on the other hand, I don't want to see Elle squash Hopper's skull like
no,
a rotten
God,
pumpkin.
No.
I don't want to see I don't want to see Will turn into the fucking fly.
Right. They are not afraid to go there, especially when it comes to Will.
Yeah.
Because holy shit, and also, they are fucking up Will.
Also, this little kid, I might retroactively give you a Baldy just by herself this year, because when he's trying, like, his mother tells him that, like, no more secrets or lies, and he's, like, spilling out all this truth that he can barely explain. He's just got this wide-eyed, like, terrified look. Is just... it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. All these kids are so goddamn good.
Yeah, and it really helps with, I guess, Will's size. Like, him being such a slight, small,
yeah,
like...
Yeah.
I don't want to say frail kid, but he, you know, he's definitely smaller than the other boys.
Right.
That certainly adds to it. And you're like, oh, God, I feel so bad for this kid.
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about what's happening to Will. So he thought it wanted everyone else. I guess it also wants him.
Well, it wants to kill everyone else. That
yeah,
was
for what purpose? What does it want Will
it
for?
It seems like it's fucking colonizing him, man.
So
I don't know what that means. I don't know what the tunnels mean, but like he's going to be the Borg Queen? I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thing. So he spawned Dart, right? It appears that these creatures are a lot like aliens, except they don't burst out of your chest. They just come out of your mouth.
Yep.
But they gestate inside a human being. Is it possible that this sky monster is gestating inside of Will and
know,
is going to come
what I'm saying. Like,
bursting out into the real world?
Dude, that's the kind of body horror that I don't know that I'm prepared to deal with when it comes to a 12-year-old little boy.
Yeah. No, it's creepy. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
I don't know, man. The monster likes it cold. I guess it has been a really cold October. Do you think there's like a connection they're making there?
Totally. And that's, I think, you know, one of the things in the preview I said, how are they going to plausibly explain how they can take a whole year off until the next chapter? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, October is traditionally cold, where it starts getting frosty in Indiana. So they can't stand heat. It seems like maybe if you could strap Will down and submerge him into like just under scalding water, it would retard the growth of this stuff. Or I don't know,
maybe
even kill him.
Drive it out.
Yeah. That would be because flamethrowers just seem like they're totally lethal. Which
flamethrowers were.
I wonder why the Demogorgon was able to shrug off being set on fire last season.
Yeah, that's like a good question.
It certainly fucked it up, but didn't really diminish its capacity for mayhem and mischief.
Yeah.
Speaking of, it did retreat, though, into the upside down again. You're so right. The other thing is this.
And, they're real quick before we get away from the heat, they're also doing the same thing with Dart, right? Like the lamps being pointed at it.
Right.
They've been hinting at that for a while.
Right. And I'm starting to wonder if, like, Will start to experience, like, sunlight sensitivity because he's already afraid. And I'm not sure. Are they afraid of water? Because Dustin mentioned that Dart doesn't need water.
Yeah.
And they kind of confused the issue of Will saying that the water's too hot, but also, like, that was a really effective scene, Dr. Clark or Mr. Clark explaining, like, an organism's fear response as we see Will exhibiting all those symptoms.
Yeah.
But I'm unclear whether they have a hydrophobia, too. This is going to be, like, some kind of signs type shit, or if it's just the heat.
That was a creepy scene where he goes to the bathtub and he's like, no, he likes it cold.
Right. Well, and the other thing is like, so Dart seemed very cute and happy and like amenable to Dustin in the beginning of this episode. By the end, when it turns like it's Demogorgon head flaps turn over, it like hisses at him. But I wonder, like, are they going to go with like, he's going to have a pet Demogorgon or is Dustin going to have to kill Dart or?
I mean, that's my first inclination is I know what this thing turns into. I have to kill it now.
Yeah, you have to. And you can't like keep your friends out of the loop for much longer on it either.
No.
Like
your mom out of the loop.
Well, I mean, Jesus Christ, is he going to like. Again, how dark is this show going to get? Is like Dustin going to be committed because his mom thinks he killed the cat or?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's a permanent consequence. A family cat gets like satanically. And that's the thing, like in the 80s, remember the narrative. And I wonder if they'll play with this. The narrative was D&D is corrupting the youth and introducing Satanism, and there's satanic cults operating in our sewer systems, and they're sacrificing goats and cats and dogs. And like, I wonder if Dustin's going to start, like, there's going to be, like, kind of a dark humor thing of his mom wanting to get him help because he's in this D&D.
Yeah.
And he always talks about these uncanny powers, and now he's killed the family cat.
That would make a lot of sense.
Right. But my predictions have been shit so far, so.
Apparently. Yeah, at least, at the very least, there's going to be an Operation Cat Murderer cover-up.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be successful, but he's got to do something about
this. It's
going
to be hard because there's blood everywhere in a carpet. And there's one thing I know about little boys. They are shit at cleaning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the other thing we've talked about, the charm of the show, is the theme of that, like, this kid logic. That they can apply these rules of D&D and Star Wars in real life. And there's this thing where, like, Will kind of repudiates that. because they get to this true site and they're like, well, this is an exact fit. And Will's like, well, you know what? This isn't D&D. It's real life.
Yeah.
Which I wonder if the show is signaling like an approach that like the kids are maturing. So we like that was fun for season one. But now we're going to like the kids are going to turn more to like science and empiricism. And I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, they probably need to head that direction at least a little bit. Because, yeah, you're right. When we get to season 4 or 5 of this thing, these kids are going to be 15 to 17. Right. They need to start thinking a little less fantastically.
And if you don't do that, then you have to posit that, like, Tolkien and Gary how do you pronounce the
Gygax.
Gygax, yeah. Thank you. Had some kind of ethereal knowledge of real upside down shit that okay. they encoded in their works. Like you go down that
you
rabbit hole.
You could go down that road, yeah.
Yeah, like they look up Gary and he's like a wild eyed crazy man in a trailer sketching out demogorgons and shit. And he's like, I knew this day would come. And he sallies forth as his firebolt and his wizard staff. Maybe. I mean, shit, if anyone can make it work, it's these guys.
Yeah, maybe they'll find, you know, a box of Gary Gygax old things and realize, oh, boy.
By the way, this has nothing to do with this previous statement. Paul Reiser is certainly evil.
Absolutely.
Because he's got to know about, like, and my only question is he evil, like, lazy kind of evil? Like, he just doesn't have respect for Hopper, so he's just not going to investigate this shit properly. Does he know about the tunnels?
No,
does
he knows. He knows everything.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking like, yeah, he's maximum Paul Reiser level bureaucratic, yeah. Sniveling, spineless evil.
For sure.
Like
he tries to explain why he needs to stop the truth from spreading.
I feel like the Duffer brothers are like, you know, they're like writing a script and like, man, we need someone that just sells this sleazy used car salesman, fucking, you know, just banality of evil guy. And they're like, you know what? Paul Reiser is like, Paul is just sitting by the phone waiting. These roles have dried up. These roles like terrorism and fantasy over science fiction have just dried these roles up.
Yeah, the shades of gray that have crept into our drama have really just put the kibosh on Paul Reiser's career, but it's coming back.
The other thing I'm worried, because like, you know, I've fallen in love with Bob, and I forget, you said something in the early going of this episode that made me briefly contemplate, oh, what if Bob is like working for the evil Paul Reiser? And it made,
no.
I actually had a legit physical anger response. Like I got angry at the betrayal. So like
prematurely angry.
I'm like, oh my god, this show's really got to me, because if Bob turns out that he's actually with Joyce because he's trying to keep a closer eye on the family and the whole Radio Shack thing's a front, I just don't.
Let me throw this at you.
Uh-oh.
So Will is getting colder and colder, right? We know that these things are heat sensitive. We talked about maybe a light sensitivity.
Yeah.
Vampires, specifically Dracula, are light sensitive.
I'm about ready to flip the table.
Bob dressed as a vampire last episode. I think there are connections to be made, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, there's tables to flip.
I'm just asking questions.
Man.
There's a lot more to talk about here.
Yeah, that's right. It's like, this is so far, I've not even looked at my notes.
Yeah,
so
let's talk about
this
L.
Shit that came out of me. Okay.
Because it's super important development this episode for L. She finds this box of Hopper's notes and records from the Hawkins lab and finds her mom.
Yep.
Uses that to connect. And I guess she could never find her before because she didn't know what she looked like.
Yeah, because she has to have something, right? Like
some
a photograph,
kind of connection.
Because that's how she found the Russian spy and how she found the guy in the building. She has to have something that, like, she's a bloodhound.
I think she needs to know what they look like because she can contact Mike without a photo.
Oh, true, right.
So she just needs to know what they look like. And now that she knows what her mom looks like, she contacts her. She's spouting some nonsense, 3 to the right, 4 to the left, 450. I have no idea what that means, but I wrote it down because it feels important.
Mm-mm.
And she has a breakdown. She's very sad afterward.
Well, her mom dissolves into smoke. What the hell did that mean?
Yeah.
Like, was there like someone behind her with a gun to her head that's just waiting for Elle to make contact? Or
no, it's...
I wonder what's confusing. What severed, like, did she lose focus because of her grief, and that's what caused her to dissolve into smoke? I wonder.
But and there also, seemed to be a moment of recognition between the two.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. She's a MK Ultra subject too, so like it wouldn't be weird if they were able to make some kind of contact. And it, like, if like the heartwarming version of the story goes that Elle is somehow able to restore her mom's sanity through the astral plane.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the
I think that's where it's going.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, Stranger Things does scare you, but the consequences to the main characters so far have been pretty blunted. Like, Will got rescued, returned to his fam. Like, poor Barb died.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Benny from the diner died. But, like, the children have been spared so far.
So far.
Yeah. Except for Barb again, because she's the...
Yeah. She wasn't a main character.
No, she wasn't a main child. She was a sub-child. So, like, I guess that's the question. Can you... I mean, are you going to kill one of these children?
I don't know. I think the potential is there to kill Will.
The thing is like, the other thing is, like, if this thing is going to have a 3 or 4 or 5 season run, like, the stakes, I think, have to be somewhat contained. Because if it gets, like, too apocalyptic too soon, there's no way this can just be contained to Hawkins, Indiana.
Yeah.
And part of this show's charm is the fact that it is in Hawkins. It'd be like in Fargo had a season that was entirely set in Miami. Like, they had an episode in California that was somewhat successful, but if just Fargo moved to Miami, it wouldn't be Fargo.
Right.
If Stranger Things, like, starts covering the war, the global war between the USSR and the USA and struggle over the upside down, like, is it even Stranger Things anymore?
Yeah, what does Stranger Things look like if the truth is out, you know?
That's... probably late season X-Files, which is pretty fucking terrible.
Truth is out there.
Truth is out there. Just constantly beyond your reach.
Okay, I don't think we have any answers on what's going to happen with Elle. What about... there are two other things I want to talk about. Nancy and Jonathan and their quest, their plan. I guess this was all part of the plan, because they go in, they record Dr. Paul Reiser, the evil Dr. Paul Reiser, in... what can only be described as pristine clarity from inside of a purse that's jostling around as they tour the facility.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd get that clear of a recording, but whatever, it's TV. This was it. This was a big plan. It's the plan we thought Hopper had at the end of last season, where he's going to immediately get taken in.
Yeah.
Turns out Hopper did not have a plan, but Nancy definitely did.
No, he does have a plan, because he alludes to it, like, I'm making progress with these people. Like, he's trying to...
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the end of last season where he gets immediately captured.
Yeah, okay. I see what you're saying. I think the question is, I think Nancy's being naive that she's going to be able to take this tape and give it to the newspapers, like the Indy Star.
Yeah.
And I think this Hawking Laboratory is really powerful. They're able to warrantlessly wiretap. They're able to make people disappear. They're able to, you know, kill citizens of the United States. Like, they're certainly able to go after the fucking press and lean, intimidate, steal. Like, as soon as they reveal the existence of this tape, like, it's just going to be like Paul. I can see already Paul Reiser giving this smarmy monologue about, you see, we could have kept it between ourselves, but now there's a whole fucking newsroom that got to get exploded by a gas leak. And
he puts a bullet in Jonathan's head.
Right. Speaking of, you know, I felt when I went home last night, I'm like, you know, I don't feel real good about that shot I took of Jonathan. He's probably a legal adult, but still, he's a young guy. And
which shot was that?
You know, the 35-year-old Ray Liotta face.
Oh, okay, yeah, no, I remember that one.
I mean, it came from a place of like, yeah, he's like, boy, he's had some mileage in the last year. And then this morning I wake up, and you know what the news alert on my phone was?
I do, yeah.
The actor that plays Jonathan got picked up with a quantity of cocaine moving through an airport. And I'm like,
yeah, denied entry.
Pump the brakes, kid. Look at Ray Liotta. Watch Goodfellas, man. You really need to pump the brakes on that powder, kid.
I mean, this
it's not doing good things for you.
This is so fucking true to the spirit of being in an 80s era kids film, right?
My next point. Yeah,
any of those kids would end up in an airport being detained for cocaine possession. Any of them.
That's the thing. Like, statistically, all these children that we're just doting over and can't believe how awesome, and they're getting all duded up for the Oscars and the Emmys. Like, 4/5 of them are going to hit the skids because this level of fame and wealth and that public attention at this young of an age is, seems like, statistically, bad news.
Yeah.
Bad news. So,
it's already starting.
That's the real stranger thing going on here.
Yeah, the troubling thing is it usually doesn't begin this early.
Well, that's because, like, we're not talking about Drew Barrymore and E.T. trafficking coke. We're talking about, like,
it's true.
You know, like Josh Brolin in the Goonies. If he'd got he seems like he's one of the ones that survived. But maybe because, you know, he was like, 18, 19?
Yeah.
So it's happening because this kid's, I'm sure he's got to be in his early 20s. I think we looked up Nancy and she was, I don't think she was like, she's certainly not 17. But
no.
Maybe we should fact check.
The dude needs to maybe cool it on the cocaine.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good for you, man.
This guy's born in 94, so he's 23.
There you go. It's an adult. You can make those decisions, but it's going to really flip the odometer fast.
All right, let's talk.
I want to talk about Billy.
Yeah, real quickly about Billy.
Who I thought was a throwback to Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. He's actually, turns out, not just a piece of shit, a racist piece of shit.
Yeah, it seems like without any other detectable reason than looking at Lucas, he judges him as someone you shouldn't hang out with.
I mean...
Seems like a racist thing.
That's the thing, like... You know, they don't wear, I mean, you know this, they don't wear fucking hoods. Like, look around, like, there's a lot more racist around than we thought, like, 5-10 years ago. And in 1984, there's a hell of a lot more racists. Now, I know these guys are from California.
Yeah.
Again, don't know their background, don't know, but there's
plenty
there's
of racists in California.
Racist in California, there's racist liberals, there's racist Democrats, there's certainly a lot of fucking racist in small hick towns in Indiana. Maybe that's the one shining point that he's seeing here. But yeah, it's pretty disgusting how he went after Max for hanging around Lucas. On the other hand, he's got this weird kind of mentoring thing he's doing with Steve.
Yeah,
he's trying
I don't
to administer
know what to
the
make
red
of this
pill
guy.
To Steve, I think.
Yeah, so he's a shitbag when it comes to his sister, his new sister, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, their family now.
Right.
And it seems like a recent thing.
Yeah.
And he's a shitbag when it comes to Lucas, but he's trying to, like, tutor Steve in how to be cool.
I just think
like how to be the best Steve possible.
I just think this is a page out of the Alpha playbook. You know, like you knock him down, you build him back up. It's like, you know, solidifying his power.
Is he going to build him into a true Alpha Steve, or is he trying to build him into the Beta Steve?
Well, like, I mean, things like that's like, I think Steve's a good guy, but he really wrestles with, you know, like anybody growing up, you wrestle with what kind of person you want to be, and what do you do when your girl hurts you bad for the first time. I'm glad that he's got, or I don't know, I guess I'm glad, but I think Billy plays an interesting foil for that continued development.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if Steve just was just like the perfect guy this season, I don't think that'd be very realistic either.
No, and I guess he's sort of the stand-in for early season one Steve, right?
Right.
Like, he's way douchier. Than Steve ever was.
The whole racism angle.
Right. There are actual reasons to dislike Billy, but... you know, Steve was kind of the guy who you were never quite sure about and always seemed to be doing borderline bad things.
Yeah.
Now Billy has taken it to the limit.
Well, plus it's like this thing like rebound effect where like Steve's like, okay, well, maybe I don't have to be douchebags like who were his friends last year?
Tommy and I don't remember the girl's name.
Yeah. And I'm going to get with a quote unquote good girl like Nancy and I'm going to do things right. And then it blows up in his face. And now, like, you know, there's a tendency to overcorrect from that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, human behavior is this pendulum. You're always swinging from one side of crazy to the other and trying to get to the middle. So I feel like that's what we're just seeing him swinging around like that.
So this is senior year for Steve.
For
Steve, yeah. We never talked about that when they mentioned it. Do you think Steve's going to be around next season? Because he mentioned, oh, maybe I won't go to college, stick around for another year so you don't forget this pretty face.
Yeah, because he can work. Apparently his dad, we knew that his family is more well off than the average student because, you know, he's driving a BMW as a junior in high school.
And of course,
his dad's got a company he can just work for. Mm-hmm. So maybe they will do that. He'll be kind of, I mean, I could see a season of him being a James Spader type.
James Spader type?
Yeah, like, you know, the Pretty in Pink kind of James Spader, the rich asshole kid.
Okay. I mean, that's,
But the heroine, but she's like, you know, there is a connection there. There's something that's intriguing there.
Yeah.
And then maybe he recovers. Because I don't know. I mean, on the other hand, like, at this point on the previous season, I was pretty down on Steve. Like, Steve was already kind of, like, turned into this asshole, and then he kind of totally, rapidly redeemed himself, so...
Yeah.
I've seen the trailers. I think there's hope for him to redeem himself.
I mean, I could see a season... I could see a future for this show without Steve as well.
Yeah.
I don't think he's essential to... really any of the plots. I mean, he's obviously closest to Nancy's, but Nancy has Jonathan, right? And they're interesting in their own right, so you don't really need that drama there once it's kind of played itself out. So season two could possibly be the last for Steve.
And to support that, like we said, like if the cast never changes, if no one ever dies, moves away, gets disillusioned, put in prison, committed to mental institutions, if there's no stakes, then... You know, it'll defang the show. Like right now, there's the potential of danger.
Yeah,
you know, you like really believe that Will's in danger. But if nothing ever happens, like if in the last act everything gets reset, I don't know how long they can hold a narrative tension. Like if Elle never gets captured, if Will never die, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, again, I sound like I'm rooting for the deaths of these little kids.
Yeah,
I'm
maybe they'll straight up kill Steve. I don't know.
Yeah,
could happen. I mean, he seems to rush headlong into danger sometimes without really thinking about it much. So could be. All right. Real quick before we go, I've got two more things that I wanted to mention. One is the AV room in this school is fucking glorious. Like all of this retro equipment is awesome. Yeah. I would love to have a room just like that.
Modern day classrooms got like fucking 3D chalkboards and digital projections and shit. It's like the transparency projector doesn't exist anymore.
It's gone. The reel to reel. There's no such thing anymore.
Yep.
But I love that old tech. The other thing I want to talk about is how great this final scene with Hopper where he's digging up the roots looks, because I don't know if it's digital effect that they're doing here, but the orange and yellow juxtaposition they're doing with like Hopper's face
and
the sky.
It
looks amazing. I don't know why, but the composition of that shot is just so good.
Yeah, totally.
And then with the camera, once he gets into the root system there, the camera turns upside down saw last season.
Yeah.
That's just really a cool effect.
Just in case you think it's a normal tunnel under the pumpkin patch. It's just unusually large Indiana gophers. They're like there's a primitive culture left over from the Ice Age. Nope, it's the upside down. All right, well, I think we should get back to the marathon.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're going to get back, but if you want to send us some feedback for consideration, either at the end of this day, Saturday, or for sure the season two wrap-ups, send it to strangerthings@baldmove.com, or as I mentioned, the forums have a thread for every episode, so you can talk spoilers in the relevant episode threads and not spoil each other and have a good time discussing that. I'll probably be trolling that for some feedback later on today. Just follow along on social media and baldmove.com and subscribe to the podcast with your tool of choice if you want to know the second that our episodes drop. So we got two more for today, three more for tomorrow. We'll get back to it. See ya.